Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and gators and grannies. Sunday afternoon edition of the Big Buzz. My name is Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on ShakingWithRadio.com. Thanks to the folks at People's Internet and Annie for picking up our show and doing what they do behind the scenes. We are a viewer-supported station, guys, so both of us are viewer-supported, so if you like what's going on, please reach into your back pocket, throw a few bucks in the kitty. I know people over at PIR and Shake and Wake would sure appreciate any kind of help you can give them. I am joined by a gentleman I haven't talked to in months now, but about time we got back together and had a conversation. Of course, I'm being funny because I just talked to you this morning. Duke Willis is with me for the next hour, and we haven't scripted anything today, so we kind of just figured we'll kind of go by the seat of our pants, and there's a lot of stuff going on in the world that me and Duke have actually had lots of chances to have conversations about it last week, and I think we could probably carry on with some of that right now. Duke, how are you doing? Welcome to the show, bud.
Hi, Barry, and thanks for bringing me on this afternoon.
Yeah, well, this morning the conversation, actually, Duke was on with Shaziz this morning on a show called The Next Roundtable, and quite a good conversation. Seems like anytime we get together, we seem to hit off on most of the same subjects that we agree on, a few things we'll never agree on, but that's makes life interesting. But I think we're pretty well on the same page as to what we see going on right now in the world due to the chaos that you see possibly coming in the very near future.
Your mic's not all that good, Barry. We're getting a lot of background noise coming through, and I'm having trouble hearing you. What was it you said about the future?
Oh, boy. I don't know what's going on with Mike. I could switch to my other mic, guys, if you want. Maybe we could try that. Maybe that'll work better. But
yeah, if the audience wouldn't mind waiting just for a minute.
Man, oh, man. Okay, well, let me try something else here, guys. Just hold on for a second, please.
Perfect.
See, now I
perfect.
Can hear you just fine.
Don't do anything.
I don't know if you moved around somewhere.
Don't
do
anything. It's perfect.
Aimed the wrong way or something, Barry. I don't know, but
it's perfect.
It almost sounds like you got a fan going in the background.
No, he was 8 foot away from his microphone. I told you.
Okay. How is that? Is that better?
Yes. Now we can hear you.
Don't you love amateur radio, guys?
Well, dude, I've told you before, you can't put the microphone on the toe of your boot and lay back in the lazy boy chair and expect it to hear you.
Okay. Now that we've got this all sorted out, I forget exactly what I was saying before we got distracted, but basically...
Now see, ladies and gentlemen, that's something you just learned about Barry Prince. Barry Prince does radio, and I do live video. I have to sit upright. I have to look at my audience. Barry, he gets to do his show in his underwear, laying back in his lazy boy chair, because nobody sees him.
Duke, you're not supposed to tell people that, man. That was kind of like something we talked about, but was kind of like, mum's the word, buddy. You want me to start talking about a couple of your quirks on air? Folks, I got some stories to tell you. No, actually. All joking aside, Duke, we do got to try and be a little bit humorous about things that we see going on right now, because we're really in some interesting times right now, to say the least. I look at what's going on south of our border right now, and I know we talked about that a little bit this morning, but some of the implications and repercussions of things that could happen here in the next week with the reports that are going to come out could really be kind of an interesting time, wouldn't you say?
Well, interesting is a gentle way of putting it.
Well, we don't want to overemphasize the situation, but you and me both know that the ripple down effects of what could happen here in the next week, if big names are released and those big names are indicted and referred for criminal prosecution, you're going to see a crazy time in the United States of America. And of course, that's going to affect Canada and the rest of the world.
Well, just this morning, the Donald tweeted out IG report. Going to be a big week.
It is going to be a big week. What's going to happen, Duke? What's the ripple down effect going to be? Boy, I'll tell you, if like I said, if some big names are all of a sudden revealed on these documents that are coming out, And the information is really given to the American public about what happened with the FISA court and everything else that went on behind the scenes as far as the attacks on Trump prior to the election. There's a lot of evidence there that if it's unveiled, it's really going to rock the American public. But I think they're aware of it at this point anyways. A good part of it.
Well, I talked about this a little bit on my show last night, and it's been a very hot topic with a number of people I've been talking with off air as well.
Yeah, well,
the
Roger
fallout from this is going to be, I would say, easily three or perhaps fourfold. It would be the hot word of the day would be multipolar in the fallout of a really drastic investigator general report, because that's what's coming out is an IG, the investigator general, not the attorney general, a political position, the investigator general, an investigative inquiry. This isn't a political thing. It is purely the law looking at the law.
Yeah, and
it's a pretty significant. Like, what comes out of this isn't just politicians pointing fingers at politicians. We see that all the time, Nancy Pelosi. This is the law determining whether or not the law was administrated properly. That's a big report. And if it comes out naming names of people violating the law, if those are people who, I don't know, pick a town, Portland. If those names come out and they happen to be the very same names that all the masked Portlandites support in their, I'll use the word, Antifa activities, if that's, you know, if Antifa supports the people that get named in this report, Portland is not where I'd want to be.
No, we talked about that earlier, Duke, and we could see major riots in the streets. I think that's all part of the plan myself. I think they're pushing us into a state of absolute upheaval in the United States of America. And, of course, the end game of that would be a complete clampdown on society. Don't know if it's going to go there with what's going to happen here in the next couple weeks, but there's definitely going to be some heads rolling when these reports come out. Donald, I know a lot of people don't like Trump. I'm standing off on Trump. I kind of don't like him, but I like a lot of things that he's done. I still see him as a player, but in the same mouthful, what's going to happen this week is really going to shock a lot of people if it has the information in it that I think is there and most people are telling us. Judicial Watch just did the biggest show on this, and I've been following him for the last 3 or 4 years. And his statement was that if these reports come out, according to what's being, you know, leaked or talked about as what's going to come out in these reports, it's going to be a very, very interesting time in the United States of America. Very interesting time. So what's going to happen with it, Duke? I'm not sure. That's what I'm kind of sitting back here looking at it and going, boy, you got a lot of people involved in the deep state. And if their backs are put up against the wall, they might come out really swinging hard. And what are they going to do? Big question.
Yeah, you back a rattlesnake into a corner, it's going to come out fangs first.
Yeah, well, they're being pushed into a corner. This impeachment process that they're pushing through right now is absolutely put them in a corner, because they know if they know it goes to a Senate trial, which Trump is challenging him to do, like him or not, he's challenging him to do that. And if it does go to a Senate trial, of course, they're all going to be put under oath and the truth will come out and it'll rock the United States of America. So they don't want to do that. All this is just something to smear the president with. I don't actually believe they'll follow through with what they're saying they're going to do right now, because they know they're hanging themselves by doing that. So I see it as just a big ploy, man.
Yeah, this whole impeachment thing, I gave up following it probably 2 weeks ago when I realized, okay, everyone knows it's a crock. And it's just a matter of time before those behind the crock get tired of pushing the game. They're obviously not tired yet, but it's not going to go anywhere. It'll be their own downfall if they keep forcing that issue. The harder they push false impeachment, the more they make themselves the obvious criminals. Yeah, so well, it's up to them how far they're going to push it.
I think they're going to have to back off myself because they, it's like I said, I say to myself right now, if Trump wasn't the president and Hillary Clinton had got in, you know, all these people out there that hate Trump to the core. Well, I can agree with a lot of their dislikes and what they see in the man. But in the same mouthful, is he a giant player? Is he a puppet just playing a part? That's a million-dollar question, dude. But he does seem to be standing up against the deep state. He seems to be doing things that are all in the best interest. Again, I ask myself, is that a ploy? Is that the part that he's playing? That, to me, is a million-dollar question. It really is.
That's the question you and I have tossed around for over a year, Barry. Is Donald Trump merely the other face or the other side of the cabal coin? You have the one world government, new world order on one face of the coin, and you have Trump rallying all those against the new world order on the other side of the coin like two giant armies. Gee, sound an awful lot like past wars to you? It does to me. The only difference here is most of the army on one side of the coin is unarmed. And the other side of the coin holds weapons that you yourself describe as beyond our imagination.
Doesn't make for a very fair fight, does it?
No, it doesn't. If any of it's true, it doesn't.
We've talked about that lots of times, Duke. What actually, what little toys they have in their toolbox for that particular time when the word go is given or they want to push the buttons and really start putting chaos into society, what kind of little toys do they have put away? We've said it many times that their technology is way ahead of what we're allowed to know about. And based on what I see going on right now with technology, that's kind of a scary proposition if you think 10 years down the road, what kind of toys we have. And we don't know about them, so that is something I think about a lot. I think that guns could be made absolutely obsolete. Whether I'm right or wrong, I see that as a real possibility because they know the public's armed. They know the public isn't going to go down without a fight. So if you had a toy that made guns obsolete, that would sure kind of set the battle in your favor, wouldn't it?
You mean guns like, or toys rather, like direct energy weapons?
Frequency weapons.
Yep.
Directed energy. You know, we know that they've
been... Hello, Scotty. This is Captain Kirk. Fire all phasers.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about all the chemicals that are in our body too, Duke, and what kind of effect are those chemicals going to have if a certain frequency was unleashed on the human body? They've got something in there that is going to react in a certain way, and it's all... These guys are psychopaths. You've got to remember that.
You just, for the third time, used the word frequency. Let's delve into that word a little bit. Think about this hot new technology that's coming out, 5G. Everyone's worried that 5G is going to kill humans off in the next 3 to 4 generations because of the mutations that those electromagnetic impulses going through us with 5G antennas every 8 to 10 houses on your street, because that's the kind of saturation level that they need in order to attain 5G. Everyone's worried about the effects these frequencies are going to have on humans. And at the same time, people are saying, oh, how can they kill off 6 billion of us? Well, you're welcoming in the weapon that's going to kill off billions of you, not by fetal manipulation of cells through radio frequencies. That takes too long. The cabal wants things to happen now, and they've got the money to make it happen now. So how does 5G kill billions of people quickly? It kills the birds and insects that your environment, your plants, need to survive. You starve to death a year after 5G gets implemented and birds drop from the sky and bugs have no predators and they destroy crops and you starve to death.
Yeah, I think, you know what, Duke, honestly, if 5G is going to have that kind of effect on plants and animals, it will have the same kind of effect on humans, because what they're talking about, the experiments done with 5Gs, they've been located to certain areas where they turned on the transmitters. And yeah, we see birds and animals dropping out of the skies. But if you think about a blanket coverage of 5G, where no matter where you go, you're exposed to those levels of radiation and frequency, we're going to be in an area that we can't get away from this stuff. And I think it'll have a lot more effect on us than what you're talking about. I think it's designed at one point to actually kill us all. It would be a very effective weapon. I mean, they're unrolling it, and we know that it's coming, and it's being brought in by who? The Chinese, our friends?
It's being brought in by the company that our crime minister just put in charge of Canadian telecommunications.
Why, yeah, our friends over in China.
Yeah, yeah, that's who's bringing 5G to us. Now, just to expand a little bit here so that the audience understands where I'm coming from here. Back in August, I went to a seminar where they had, among other speakers, one of the speakers was a guy doing an hour-long presentation on smart meters and 5G. And he referred to tests in China where birds literally within less than 24 hours of 5G in place, birds were literally flying into each other, dropping dead out of the sky.
Barry, Duke.
Pardon Doug, me?
Huh? Doug is in here. Doug's in the
yes,
show.
Yes, I noticed him pop in.
Oh, he is in here. Okay.
Hi, Doug.
How are you doing, Doug?
And, hey, guys. And what was happening was exactly what I described with insects no longer having birds as predators. And for those of you who are thinking, what do you mean the birds are predators? Think about how many swallows or how many insects a swallow consumes as it flies around your backyard eating mosquitoes. That's why people put martin's nests and stuff, martin's birdhouses in their backyards, is because those birds eat the bugs, right? Any farmer out west will tell you that. Take those birds away because of 5G, and the bugs are going to have a field day. And that's what they found in China. Hi, Doug.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Mr. Force? I just read a study, Duke, on the size of birds, and they tested 70,000 samples from around the world on 152 different species of birds. And every sample tested showed a size and body reduction over the last 5 years. Every sample tested showed a size and body reduction, but an increase in wingspan. So why is that? Birds have to fly farther. They have to fly faster to catch insects. Maybe we're seeing a depletion in insects. But that's one study I just read, and it really kind of boggled my mind that birds are getting smaller and smaller as time goes on. But it's all playing into the same
agenda. And you have to wonder about what's being sprayed on the crops that the insects are consuming, and then the birds are consuming those insects.
Well, of course, we know they're using glyphosate still in a lot of countries. A lot of countries have banned it, but it's not just glyphosate. It's all the pesticides that they're using are affecting the birds and the insects.
Exactly.
It's inevitable that that's going to happen.
You are what you eat, right, Doug?
Absolutely. You got to take good care of yourself. And the whole idea of all of what you're talking about, you just have to look at what Agenda 21 is about. And what this is really about is a depopulation of the planet. It's a eugenics way of getting rid of the people. The simplest way to say it. And I, you know me, Duke, I have this wonderful phrase that I use when I hear people talking in favor of eugenics. We need to try it on them first.
Yeah, it's called slow kill, Doug.
Yes.
It's called slowly kill us so that we don't really see it and we accept it as a new norm.
Correct.
We could talk about all kinds of different aspects of that statement, but it's done very slowly so society doesn't see it. It's like anything they've done in the last 40, 50 years, the changes they've made in our society. I'm 65, and I remember what society was like when I was 10 years old. I have vivid memories of my childhood. And I grew up in Toronto, and I roamed the streets of Toronto. My parents had no problem with me being two or three blocks away at any particular time because they could phone a neighbor two blocks away and find me. They didn't have to worry about me being abducted or shot or killed or my head cut off or any of the things that we see going on now in big cities. It's really getting crazy. And now I look at what's going on in cities like Toronto, man. It's just absolutely gone down the tubes. Unbelievable, some of the stuff I'm seeing. Yesterday they had a shootout on the 400, man. It seems like now in Toronto you're seeing shootouts and gun activity just about every day of the week. I went Cochrane, Alberta here last night. The RCMP raided a man's house. The neighbors, here's the story, and came out just about a little. I sent you the link there, dude. But I chased the story down. It is true that the RCMP went to arrest a fellow. They threw a stun grenade into the guy's house. And the guy came running out of the house in the shop. This happened in Cochrane, Alberta last night.
Wow.
So what the heck is with that? What's going on with the RCMP? Well, we know.
We had two Niagara Regional police officers on duty get into an argument at one of the officers' homes and shoot each other.
Yeah, but they were just taking care of business. Thank goodness. I was reading on Zero Hedge today that there was officers down in Florida, and they actually hid behind passersby in this firefight they were having with a FedEx truck robbery, and these cops actually hid behind the people while shooting. They used the passersby on the freeway. They were in their cars. They were shooting from behind these people's cars with people in them.
Well,
seems like
there isn't a day go by where we don't read about something crazy going on, especially in the police forces. Yesterday, a naval base down the States, Pensacola, was a Saudi national, shot three people.
Yeah.
It seems like every day, and especially down in the United States, man, it's like, it doesn't seem like there's a day go by now that you don't hear of some kind of an attack with somebody killing somebody, and it really seems to be getting out of hand. So what's going on?
Well, people have a lot less tolerance these days because of what's going on. You know, you're unemployed or you have the bleak future of unemployment. You might be working two jobs just to pay your rent. Your wife, your kids, you know, they're not where they were 10 years ago. You know, where you were able to afford to send your son to college or your daughter to college. Now you're just barely able to put food on the table for them. So, yeah, I mean, people are nerves are raw. How do you expect that?
That didn't happen overnight,
Jeff. No, it takes its time. So here's the headline.
Takes a while.
Outrage after police use bystanders as human shields in Florida UPS truck shootout.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the headline.
Well, I think there'd be a couple officers answering some questions today about that, because that would be the last thing you'd expect a cop to do.
And look what happened when that kid went into the school in Florida, Broward County, same county, where the police officer that was supposed to guard the school decided that he wanted to go for a cigarette and a coffee and a donut because it was that time of the day, and let the kid walk through the school and kill all those people.
His union says he's entitled to a 15-minute break every 2 hours.
Yeah, that was pretty sad, actually. And there's still a lot of backlash over that. I mean, if I was in that situation and that was my job, I'd be in there like a dirty shirt. And I'm sure anybody else here would be in there like a dirty shirt, because we all want to protect our kids, man. But we see this kind of stuff going on all over the place. Talk about craziness. Look at all the liquor that gets stolen out of stores in Ontario now. The guys just walk in, walk out of it. Nobody does a thing about it. Millions and millions of dollars of liquor, and nobody does anything about it.
Well, at the end of the day, it's the taxpayer to pay for it anyway.
It's our money, so the government won't have to worry about it.
They don't give a shit. Excuse my language.
They don't care, Barry. Here in Ontario, they don't care the... well, I'll be honest with you now. I'm going back to 1990-91, okay? The only two departments, segments, ministries of the Ontario government that turn a profit annually is why can't I think? Now I'm at a loss. Ministry of Transportation and whoever it is, what do they call themselves? Doug, help me out here. Liquor Board. LCBO.
LCBO.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the first two letters. Liquor Board, LCBO. Sorry, folks, my brain went on pause there for a second. The clutch was slipping, and I was stuck in neutral.
And the problem, Duke and Barry, is that the government doesn't need to make a profit. As a matter of fact, they're not in the profit business. They're in the power business. And the more they tax, the more they license, the more they infringe upon our rights, the more power they have, the less we have, both financially and with our rights being infringed upon. And they don't care. It's not that, we have a heart, we have a morality here. No, they don't give a rat's ass.
They're in the power business.
Exactly. If you look at who Chrystia Freeland is, she's now the deputy prime minister or whatever. She is a Rhodes Scholar Malthusian. Now, Malthusians are here in Canada. These people are the eugenicists, the eugenics people. They want a depopulation of the planet. So she got Climate Barbie to instill these onerous carbon taxes on farmers out in the prairie provinces so that they're actually bankrupting, so that the food supply will shrink and hence cause starvation, which is what they're looking to do. That's why they shut down the pipeline work in Alberta. That's why they stopped giving out permits for new oil companies to come in and create more jobs, more infrastructure. All gone. Why? Because, climate change. Oh, my goodness. We've got to stop this. These are the Malthusians, my friend, here in Canada. And they are there to kill us. Period.
Well, the end game is to completely destabilize our society, our economic systems, our culture. It is all under attack. And it's coming from multiple different directions. Our economy right now in Canada is into a tailspin. 5.9% unemployment numbers are way up. We lost 71,000 jobs last month. Great reports coming out from the government every month. Do you think they care? This is all part of the agenda, folks. And it's really starting to hit home. Most Canadians still aren't seeing it quite yet, but in the next little while, you watch some of the stuff that's going to come out of this government.
Here's what we need. We need good old Trudeau to walk across the border and give good old Trump a slap across the face and say, go ahead and sanction us, you bastard.
Watch your language, Chase. Hey, Doug, we have a Christian station on air here with us. So we kind of just watch the language a little bit, if you don't mind. But thanks.
Sorry.
It's okay. Okay.
Sorry.
I know.
I'm just going to sit here and adjust my halo.
Listen, I'm doing it out of respect for people that are asking me to try and keep language off the shows, and I respect their
I'm just glowing in the fact that I'm not being the one chastised for using vulgar language, because usually it's me.
You have improved 1,000%. When you want to control your language, I notice that you have no problem doing it at all. So I applaud you. You are getting better with time. You're like a bottle of wine. Anyways, let's go forward.
The point I was trying to make here, Barry, is maybe we can get Mr. Trump to sanction Canada like they did with Russia, because the Russian economy is now scheduled to go 6% of GDP. It's up 6% by GDP. It's amazing. They're just doing a grand job over there in Russia. Now that they've stopped using the U.S. dollar for global trade, their economy is booming. Maybe that's what we need to do here. Mr. Trudeau needs to get the U.S. to sanction Canada, and maybe our economy will turn around. Who knows?
Well, there's a reason the parent bird pushes the baby bird out of the nest and forces them to learn how to fly. That's what the U.S. did. They cut Russia off and said, you're on your own. And Russia found out how – they learned how to fly all on their own. And they're doing great.
Yeah, they are. They just brought in 15,000 South African farmers into an area of Russia. I was looking at the area on Google Earth. It is one of the most productive areas in Russia for growing crops. And they brought in 15,000 South African farmers who are being persecuted and brought them into this area in Russia. They're doing a lot of things that are really smart. They're allowing farmers to do what farmers want to do. They want to be farmers. Oh, what is that?
Sorry, that was my phone going off. Somebody tried calling me on Skype.
I thought we were being zapped from space. But yeah, Russia is doing a lot of good things.
Well, and it, and thank, and you know, Mr. Putin needs to thank Mr. Trump for his sanctions, and then Mr. Obama for the sanctions, because it's forcing a de-dollarization of the world, which is not a bad thing, especially when, you know, you use the dollar, and the Americans have a tendency, the deep state, not so much the political side of it, but the deep state has a tendency to come in and say, look, you'll do as we tell you to do, and if you don't, well, then we're just going to pull the trigger.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, it's kind of interesting now. We see a lot of countries and a lot of economies pulling away from the American dollar, which has been the hallmark for the economies around the world for how many years now, Doug? You know, ever since it's been on the American dollar. And now we see it being pulled away from multiple areas and multiple people, and countries are getting away from it. So what's the ripple down effect going to be in a couple of years? We see the dollar collapse.
Here's the funny thing. So up until about 4 years, 5 years ago, 80% of the world used U.S. dollar or Federal Reserve note denominated as the U.S. dollar as its global reserve currency. Now, right. 4 years later, through de-dollarization, we're down to less than 58% is now being used on a global scale. And you can see now that the velocity of money on that global scale has slowed down so dramatically that there's a liquidity crisis right now here in the Western world. And the Federal Reserve on the overnight lending produces $120 billion a day for overnight lending. They are the only lender in that market today. If you look over in Europe at LIBOR, the cost of LIBOR or overnight lending in Europe has jumped from 2% over 6%.
It's you explain to, crazy. Explain to what overnight banking is to some people, because some people don't know what that is.
Overnight lending, how that works. Is let's say I'm a multinational corporation and I have bills that I'm receiving money in every day, basically. But in order for me to keep my payroll going, keep my factories going, my harvests, et cetera, I need to have money now. I can't wait for my receivables to come in. So I put my receivables up as collateral and I borrow money for the overnights because I know the money will be there tomorrow morning from my receivables, but I need the money today. So I'll borrow it morning and then pay it back the following morning.
Think of the overnight loans as an overnight payday loan for a big, huge company that has maybe 8 or 10 other smaller companies it's responsible for. Each of those companies has a bunch of checks they wrote today that the bank is going to take out of their bank account at the end of business today, and the bank won't deposit payments coming in from customers until the morning. And overnight, they need a payday loan to keep their accounts in the black. So they do these big, huge – I can't tell you that for sure Coca-Cola is a company that does this, but I'm going to use them just as an example because people recognize the name. Coca-Cola will borrow on the LIBOR, the overnight loans program, and put some of that into the Dasani bank account because Coca-Cola owns Dasani. They'll put it into other companies that they own to make sure their bank accounts are flush overnight. And in the morning, when the bills come in, the payments come in, rather, from customers, they don't need that overnight payday loan, and they pay it back on huge interest. I didn't pay full attention, Doug. Did you point out how much they went in a jump in October? How much the feds were putting in October and how much they jumped it to?
Yeah, they initially were putting – because other people loan into the overnights, okay? It's called a repo market. And so there's other lenders that were other lenders, like hedge funds who were sitting on capital that they wanted to put to work. They're now no longer in that market. The only player is the Fed. And the Fed used to put in somewhere around $10 to $15 billion. On the overnights, which was pittance compared to it. But it went from that to $45 billion, then suddenly to $60 billion, and then literally within 10 days, it was $120 billion. Today, it's somewhere within $120 to $140 billion right now, every day,
the economy needs a $140 billion payday loan just to keep it going.
Correct.
So think about your household. all the people listening to this, you can relate to this, okay? Think of your household. You've made payments on the bills, on the car, on the credit card, and when those payments go through, you're going to be into your overdraft for more than you've got on your overdraft. So you run down the street to Money Mart and you borrow $100. You put it in your bank account and your bank will be balanced overnight. Come morning, the e-transfer from the whatever it is you did today lands in your bank and you'll be okay. You take the $100 out, you take it back to Money Mart, you pay them their $100 plus their interest. What happens to you at the end of the week when you have to do that every night? You're broke because you're paying interest on that $100 every day. And instead of getting closer to making the ends meet, just trying to hold up the two ends at the same time is leaving you broke.
Well, I get educated all the time because I really didn't know much about this in the past, and it's kind of an education to me. So you're telling me, what happens if that money wasn't there?
Oh, we'd be the whole system would collapse.
What would happen?
It'd be over. It would be over. It would
1929, October 1929, over again.
Duke, it would be much worse than that.
Well, yes.
Well, Gerald Salenti, I just listened to, I can't retain all the information that I hear, but he just did a video and he talked about the next depression, and it's going to make 1929 look like a picnic.
Yes.
Yep. So we should all be preparing for that at this particular point if we can, because I believe it's coming. Just when?
Well, and once again, you know, we're doing I hope you'll be available for a roundtable tonight if you want to be. We're doing a roundtable tonight. I was talking, we're going to be talking about unipolar world versus multipolar world and the economics behind all of that, what's going on right now in the world that we see. And we've already touched on a little of what we're going to be talking about tonight with the LIBOR and the repos, the overnight lending and the Fed, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to go into it in much more detail at the roundtable tonight. But yeah, it really does come down to this. The rest of the world, the BRICS nations, the Monaco Accord, 162 Monaco Accord nations, have already structured themselves not to use the U.S. dollar. They just haven't pulled the pin on that grenade because they're waiting for the U.S. to blow its own feet off. Then that way history will show it was the U.S. that caused their own collapse and not Russia or China or the Monaco Accord nations that actually did that. And understandably, because I honestly don't think that Russia or China could accelerate it any worse than what the U.S. is doing right now anyway, to be honest with you. And that's a really sad thing to say, I'm sorry to say. But the end of the day, we are in deep, deep doo-doo in this side of the world. Mm-hmm. And I've been saying this for quite a long time now, that we, the people here on the landmass commonly known as Canada, have a solution. And that solution is to seek de jure governments in our sovereign nations of Ontario, of Alberta, of British Columbia, etc., and join the multipolar world. And then not let what's going to happen to the United States and Europe, that great huge sucking sound you'll hear across the Atlantic, is Europe imploding, and they're on that. They're high on that road right now. Christine Lagarde just came out earlier this week and said, "Well, we're going to have to take climate change into the central bank and make sure that that we can get new securitizations up and running and going here because we ran out of stuff to securitize and drive that debt and make that debt bigger." So they're already in underwater, deep water. Deutsche Bank a month ago was underwater. It was gone. It was literally gone. They have $97 trillion on the book for derivatives. That's Deutsche Bank. There was a backdoor bailout to Deutsche Bank. I watched this. I was going, oh my God, it's gone. Woohoo! Deutsche Bank is going to collapse the whole world economy. They're done. And the Fed printed, not to let the taxpayers know, but printed several hundred billion and multiples of trillions of U.S. dollars and stuffed them in the back door at Deutsche Bank. So that the next morning, I caught up the next morning and went, wait a minute. Why is this supermarket still going? What's going on? What's happened? Then I did a little more research and went, oh, they did a backdoor bailout to Deutsche. It was done.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
How much money do they owe? $97 trillion?
No, okay. The $97 trillion is the notational value on their derivatives book. Look at J.P. Morgan, $93 trillion. Bank of America, $76 trillion. Now, the world GDP is about $50 trillion, $55 trillion today.
Say, Barry?
Yes, sir.
Can I add something here?
Okay.
Sure.
The total worldwide alleged debt is somewhere between 1.5 quadrillion and 2 quadrillion.
Actually, Steve, the derivative notational value on derivative book globally is 2.8 quadrillion.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's
1,000 trillion times 2.8.
Yeah. That was actually about a 5-year-old figure. I was going by.
Well, in 08,
I don't have that much money.
In 08, when everything went off the cliff in 08, the derivatives book was 1.8 quadrillion. They've added another quadrillion to it in 10 years.
Who's holding all this debt, man? there's got to be somebody in a big mountain somewhere with a big pile of money somewhere.
I
don't know about.
Well, let me explain what a derivative is first. Okay, a derivative is a bet on somebody else's bond. You don't have to own the bond, and it doesn't have to be the whole bond. You could have a CDO, which is a collection of various types of debt bundled into one. It's securitized like they did with the mortgage debt. You have subprime, you have medium, then you have AAA. So people will take out a derivative on the subprime and say, okay, we're going to bet against the subprime, and you're going to take the side of the subprime, and we'll bet that I'm going to bet that it's going to go down in X amount of time, and you're going to bet that it won't. So that's what a derivative is, okay? And on a global stage, there's hundreds of billions of dollars worth of bonds out there. It's all on weather. Oh, they do. They actually write derivatives on weather forecasts of all things. My God, you know. And it's all about whether one side takes X and the other side takes Y. The funniest ones that I've ever seen, the funniest derivatives I've ever seen were derivatives on U.S. Treasuries. You got one guy betting on one side that the Treasury is going to fail, and another guy betting on the other side saying the Treasury won't. The guy on the side that says it will is going to get paid off in U.S. dollars. How ridiculous is that? If the Treasuries go, where did the U.S. dollar go? Zip. But this is what this is. This is this gambling casino. When Clinton took down Glass-Steagall. He removed the wall, the concrete wall between banking and investment banking. He tore that down to allow the bankers now to get into the investment banking side and gamble on their holdings, on your bank account. By the way, if you deposit money in the bank here in Canada or in the United States or in England or in Europe, it now belongs to the bankers. You're making a short-term loan to them. It's no longer your money, which allows them to go out and do this gambling. And it's not a matter of you need to have money to cover that. You don't. Because these are tickets, like you go buy a lottery ticket, except they don't have to pay for the lottery ticket unless they lose. So these guys, they go out and they put all these derivatives, one bank against another bank, and that's where the derivatives book of J.P. Morgan is $93 trillion, Deutsche Bank, $97 trillion, Bank of America, $73 trillion, Citibank, HSBC, Barclays, all of these big banks are all involved in the derivatives play. Now, you'd think, wow, that's pretty bad. Well, let's go look at the Chinese banks. How many of them are involved in derivatives play? Well, nobody. How about the Russian banks? How many of them are involved in derivatives play? Nobody. Well, how about the Indian banks? Nope. What other banks are involved? Well, there's some banks in Dubai that are involved. Rabobank, which is the Saudi-owned bank in Europe, it's one of the top banks in Europe, no derivatives book. They refuse to buy into the derivatives thing. So who are all the big banks that are playing in the derivatives world? Well, think of Credit Agricole, BNP Paribas, Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, UBS, all of the big known top 25 banks, and then their underling banks are all involved in this derivatives play. So that's the Western world.
Well, that's a lot for my little brain to comprehend. I'm quite honest about, you know, my capacity in my brain to retain this kind of information. And if I look at it three or four times, it'll finally sink in. But, the bottom line is it's a scam. And they're scam artists. And they've been doing it for a lot of years. And people ask me how I live without a bank account. I shut down my bank account 4 years ago. And I live quite well without a bank account. So I'm one less dollar in their accounts. And it might not be, it's not significant. It's just, I figured, you know what? I started looking at how the banking system worked, and I started looking at fiat currency and fractional banking and what they're allowed to do, the things they're allowed to do that would put us in jail. And I figured, okay, I'll just stop dealing with these guys. And it's only a tiny little thing, but you know what? You can live without a bank account, folks. You can. There's no problem. It's an inconvenience in a lot of places, but you can live without one. So try it. You'll like it. Well, and they can't track me as easy.
Well, absolutely. I agree with you, Barry. You don't have to have a bank account to get along in this world. They just want you attached to that. It's like their umbilical cord to your money.
Well, of course, it's another way for them to track everything that you're doing. You think that what's going on in your bank accounts isn't being monitored by government agencies? You're crazy.
Absolutely.
So why would you want to put your money there where they're going to know everything you do and every penny you save or spend?
Well, and for your American listeners, I'm going to tell you a quick little story on how not to use Federal Reserve notes, denominated as U.S. dollars, legally and lawfully. There's a little thing called Title 12 USC 411, which states very clearly that you can take any Federal Reserve note into any Federal Reserve bank or the U.S. Treasury and convert it to lawful money of the United States, U.S. dollars. So people who have bank accounts, and David Merrill was the one that discovered this back in the early 80s, and he has about 2.5 to 3 million followers throughout the U.S., they convert their bank accounts to only accept lawful money of the United States, Title 12 USC 411, U.S. dollars. At the end of every year, when they file their 1040 tax return, instead of having to pay the taxes, they put brackets around, and everything that's been deducted from their paycheck for the year is returned to them in full because they're no longer using Federal Reserve notes. So what does that tell you about the Income Tax Act in the U.S.? Wait a minute, could that possibly be, oh no, user fees for using the private script of the Federal Reserve? Oh, there it is.
Interesting.
Doug, you just really like stirring up a hornet's nest sometimes.
Well, hey, that's okay, though.
For the members of the audience who are kind of sitting there going, what are you talking about, Duke? Doug discussed that very same issue on American Nuck Radio with Mike Phillips, and Mike lost his job over that.
He lost his job over that?
Thankfully, we're not on an American-based station.
Yeah, we were live at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Washington, D.C. and Dallas-Fort Worth, and it was not a recorded. We went out live and...
Steve, you want to add something?
Yes, I do. A lot of people don't know on a legal document, brackets over, I mean, on the outside of anything, whether it's your signature or some sort of text or writing or whatever it is, means that whatever that writing or name or text is it nullifies it to that document.
Correct. But when you put it on a tax return, you put the brackets around what you're supposed to pay at the end. That means that money comes back to you. If you didn't have the brackets there, they would keep the money.
Yes.
But you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. When you put brackets around a signature at the bottom of any form, you're right. It nullifies the form.
Really?
That's a good little trick.
Good little trick. I didn't know that.
The other one you might want to do. I've been doing it for years. When you write your rent check, or if you write checks, write them in red ink because it kills the dot. It kills it. The bankers hate it because the bankers will take your checks written in blue and black ink and they securitize them and then they monetize them. So not only do they take the money out of your account, okay, to pay the landlord or pay Sears or whatever you're paying. But now they have your wedding signature on the bottom of the check. They take it to the Bank of Canada, and they get paid yet again. So if you do it in red ink, that's debt. They can't do that, and it kills the check upon cashing it. So it only goes one time, period. That's it.
Barry?
So you're right to your landlord. Now, the bankers hate it. They just absolutely, I had my landlord say, can you please stop writing your checks in red ink? My bankers are freaking out. And I'm going, no, nope.
Say, Barry. Nope. Barry, actually what they're doing, is triple dipping on everything.
Well, keep talking because I'm learning, guys.
I didn't
know that.
Just to give everybody sort of a man on the street reference that you can put in the back of your mind in regards to Doug telling you about red ink, any of you out there who have ever dealt with an officer, I hate to use the word police, I prefer policy officer, you know that all their notes, that little notebook they carry, and they put down the, I was there at such and such a time, what was your name, and they write your name down. All of those notes have to be done in black ink. Any other color ink, it won't be accepted as evidence in court. Now, that's here in Ontario. I can't speak for other jurisdictions. But here in Ontario, a police officer can only use black ink. And Doug's right. When I was in the mutual funds industry, if a client signed documents with a red pen, I couldn't accept them.
That's right.
They were null and void. But I signed them. Yeah, but you used red. Well, it's all I had in the car. Oh, well, we got to do it again.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nice thing because the bankers pull their hair out. I mean, if you go up to the teller and you do it in red ink, they're going to decline taking your deposits or what have you. But if you're writing a check to a third party, they just deposit it anyway. Like my landlord, you know, they got 70 units in the building I live in. So he's got 70 checks coming in every month. He just throws it into the overnight deposits and off they go. What are they going to do? Reject the check? Why? Now they've got to explain why. Well, because we can't triple dip.
So, Doug, before you came on, and I'm just going to take the steering wheel and give it a good hard left turn just because. Before you joined us, Doug, Barry and I were talking about a bunch of things, including the fires in Australia. And while you guys have been talking, I've been surfing over here on my other computer and checking out some of the aerial views, satellite shots of the fires in Australia. I can't believe it. There's areas on one section of fire is bigger than the state of New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, and there's multiple of them. I was looking at the numbers yesterday, Duke, and what's happening with these fires. They're calling them mega fires because they're predicting winds here. The forecast for winds in the next 5 to 6 days have winds in around 40 to 60, possibly up to 70 miles an hour. They're just getting into the start of their fire season. So their projections for the next 3 months is hottest, driest days of the year, and they have this start to the fire season. They have no way of controlling these fires because the embers are spreading faster than they can keep up with them. It's just unbelievable. I was looking at it, and I feel for these people because they are really, Australia's had lots of fires in the past. They've had big fires, but this is really starting to get close to the biggest ones and the worst situations they've ever had to deal with. So, it's just starting. That's the scary thing.
Well, and don't forget that Mother Nature uses fire to clean the lands of all the deadfalls and so forth. And the fires that go on in California every year that's just Mother Nature clearing off the land. The California government, in their highly intelligent Democrats, decided that it was illegal for people to go in and clear the deadfalls and get rid of the dry brush and so forth in the okay, yep. And you wonder why you have these wildly raging fires?
Yeah, you look at other states that are allowing, they're the states that are actually doing fire prevention and getting rid of the dry stuff because they know when a fire comes through, it's going to go like crazy. You look at states that are doing that, yep. And the drop in fires is incredible. But California, they're doing nothing about it. It's like they want to burn the people out of the country, and that's what's happening. It's an agenda, Doug.
But Barry, they actually created laws that prevent people from doing that.
Exactly.
It's like,
you know, where is the mentality in that? But then anything you look at what's going on in California, you'll see the same thing. Where is the common sense approach to anything they're doing in California right now? There is none because it's being run by lunatics.
That's true. We call there's now this new song out. You know, I left my shit. Excuse me. They call it Scat Francisco.
Yeah, it's pretty sad when you have what's the one that just came up again? The right on the tip of my tongue, guys.
Barry, Doug.
A virus that disappeared in the dark.
Bubonic plague.
Hey, Barry.
Bubonic plague. That's it. Yes, Steve.
You know they actually have a smartphone app for San Franciscans to tell you where the SCAD is, which sidewalk, which corner.
What areas of the cities to avoid? What
areas of the cities to stay away from.
We shouldn't even laugh about that. That is pretty
sad. This is
that is beyond sad when a civilized country like the United States of America, with the wealth they have, is allowing this to happen in their cities. It's beyond sad. I've looked at the videos. And I can't even envision living like that. These people are just, they're decimated. Most of them are on drugs. Most of them don't have a way out. And they're just being chased from one homeless situation to another. You know, they set up their tents, they're chased out. They go to another location, they're chased out. And it's just getting worse. The numbers are growing. But the same thing's happening in Canada here.
Oh,
our homeless numbers are going right through the roof. People aren't aware of that, but they are.
And here in Ontario, in all the provinces, we sit on hundreds of billions of dollars and trillions of dollars worth of our own resources that the federal authority believes is theirs to control. Section 109 of the photocopy of that British North American Act in their archives say that's what gives us the power over your resources, and we will control them. There shouldn't be homelessness. There shouldn't even be taxes, let alone homelessness and poverty.
There's so much wealth in this country. We should be getting a check from the government every month.
Well,
we're the richest country in the world for resource base.
There was a guy in Alberta who sat down and figured out if the people of Alberta had control over their resources, every man, woman, and child in Alberta would receive $7,000 a month ongoing.
Okay.
How's that?
That would be pretty nice, wouldn't it?
How ridiculous.
It would make for a very lazy workforce, I'll tell you.
Well, that's the immigrants.
Nobody be going to work. They'd all be going skidooing.
That's what immigrants are for, Barry.
Hey, Barry.
Yes, Steve.
Did you want to take a break? You're already about 3 minutes over.
Oh, yeah, I do need to take a break. I'm going to take a three-minute bathroom or four-minute bathroom break here, guys. I'll be right back. Hang around. We'll continue this conversation.
Okay.
Well, welcome back, guys. Second hour. That was a great conversation, the first hour, and we're going to continue the second hour. I don't know where we're going. We haven't scripted anything today, but there's not a lack of things to talk about. That's for sure, Duke. What do you think? A few things we could talk about. We talked about Australia, and, we haven't really talked about tectonic events. There hasn't been really anything significant in the last week that I've seen, except for some movement in around the Cascadia, which is one that I'm watching very, very closely, and a lot of seismologists are watching the Cascadia very closely right now. They're expecting movement on that line, but they've been expecting movement there for years. But one of the things that was brought to my attention was the amount of methane gas that's being actually released underwater off the coast of Oregon and Washington State. Incredible increase, apparently, in methane B4, I believe it's called, is being released from the ocean bottom, which is always a precursor to a volcanic eruption. There is magma underneath these plates. There's magma basically all over the west coast of the United States. Massive amounts of underwater molten lakes under the United States of America. Some, they are still just discovering the size and the depth of some of the pools. Interesting times we're seeing right now. It really is. The Cascadia volcanoes, we talked about it before, Duke, of the 10 most dangerous volcanic activity volcanoes in the world today, six of them are in the Cascadia Range, which is, of course, up and down the west coast of the United States of America and Canada.
Barry, it's ironic you mention that, because just Thursday night I took a quick surf through a couple of the pages that you've sent me over time to look at different geological events and what's hot. And you're right. Right now, it's almost like everything's asleep compared to the activity we've seen in the last 8 months, especially down near Australia and the Pacific Rim, as they call it. Welcome back, Doug.
Thank you. Everything's set up for tonight for you guys.
Pardon me?
I said for Barry and for Steve, I talked to Ed, and he will be ready to do a sound check in about an hour and a half with them.
Cool. Okay. Do you follow geological events, Doug? Do you follow stuff like that? Or are you on top of that? Do you pay much attention to stuff that's going on?
Well, the Ring of Fire going on in the Pacific, with the various volcanoes that are going off both on the surface and under the water itself. I pay attention to the New Madrid fault line. Just had a bunch of activity come off of that, which is where we sit up here in Toronto, ends the New Madrid fault line, splits the CANDU reactors out in Ajax. How's that for?
Well, what's a little meltdown next door to your house, Doug? Nothing to worry about. I mean,
it's just a little Chernobyl. Don't worry. It'll be all right in 50, 60,000 years.
I watch more of the headlines, though, Barry.
We talk about this stuff, and I really hope that we don't see any of what we're talking about in our lifetime, because if we do, things are going to change, and they're going to change forever. You know, you talk about the San Madre fault line, Doug. You know, when it let go in the early 1800s, 1811, 1812, there was three earthquakes on that fault. They were all over 8.2 in magnitude, 8.3 and an 8.4, all within about a four-month period. Well, if that same event was to happen today, the effects on the Mississippi River, the chemical plants, the refining plants, the nuclear power plants that are on the Mississippi River on that fault line right now is almost something that you could write a very good horror movie about.
Yeah.
Because we're looking at a situation really, you know, the human race is so short-sighted. We really are such a short-sighted, for being intelligent beings that we're supposed to be, we really have ignored the most important thing in our lives, and that's the planet. And we've allowed, you know, the Industrial Revolution to give us oil, to give us gas, to give us nuclear power. And we look at what's going on the planet now and some of the effects of this. And, boy, you know, we're just starting to see the beginning of the effects of what nuclear power is going to do to the planet. You know, we've seen what happened with Fukushima. Well, you know, there's right now on the planet Earth, there's 71 of those GE Mark I designed nuclear power plants in operation. They're the worst conceivable design of a nuclear power plant ever designed by the human race. Mm-hmm. And I believe the number was 72 of them are operating right now on the planet Earth, where they store the fuel rods in the ceilings of these generators. You're basically just a recipe for disaster. Fukushima, we're going to continue to hear about it. Fukushima is only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. And that's just one situation where we've had a major incident at a power plant. Well, what happens to the planet if we have 10 or 15 of those particular incidents happen? What if a major tsunami, say 50 to 100 feet, hit the west coast of the United States and Canada? How many nuclear power plants are going to go into meltdown? We are so short-sighted, we are committing suicide via nuclear power. I believe that. It's only a matter of time.
Here's an interesting
hiccup, and we see the effects. Go ahead.
Here's an interesting little aside for you. There's a company here in Canada that actually owns the newest of the nuclear power plants that actually take all of the wasted nuclear power rods that come out of these old style of nuclear power plants and use them up, and they produce zero waste.
Yeah.
Off of these. And these are small nuclear power plants. These aren't even great big massive $100 billion or $20 billion creations. These are small plants that's what they use. They use the waste product from these nuclear. You could take these old nuclear power plants offline, take all of their waste that has been buried in the ground or sunk in the ocean and take it and bring it back. And this these power plants will utilize that. And then they produce zero waste. It's 100% consumed.
Absolutely. When the fuel rods, they're only using 15% of the available power in the fuel rods before they're set aside.
Now, the name of that company here in Canada that owns these, the design and will and the build specs and all that stuff that can build these things, the name of that company is SNC-Lavalin. Think about that.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that, folks?
I heard that.
Did you hear it, Barry?
I heard that.
All over the internet, I heard people's chins go into their tables. Did you feel it? It vibrated the ground.
You felt that, eh?
Yeah. SNC-Lavalin owns the rights to the ability to remove all nuclear waste from our planet. And what is SNC-Lavalin? One of the 250 criminally corrupt corporations named by the IMF.
Well, and here's the wonderful thing about what the IMF is. It's a criminal organization that loans money to countries that can't afford to borrow it at onerous interest, and then demands that they give up their public infrastructure to private corporations to pay the interest on loans that they created out of thin air. Nice group of people of the IMF. So anything that they put out that says, oh, these companies are criminal, I would think that it would be the opposite that they're writing about, because the IMF is the criminal. So when you look at SNC-Lavalin, why they were attacked here in Canada, what came out of Libya, and they never took any bribes in Libya, by the way. They built the man-made river project for Gaddafi that the Canadian F-18 jets went in and bombed back to the Stone Age and destroyed that infrastructure. That was Canada. All the F-18 jets had the Canadian flag on the tail. They went in and they destroyed the man-made river project that SNC-Lavalin engineered, architecturally designed, and built. So to bring water out of the aquifer up to the desert so that Egypt and Libya and the surrounding countries would be food self-sufficient. So that's why they –
So no, now, you cannot do that. We do not want them to be self-sufficient. They shall depend on us.
And Gaddafi did it without borrowing a penny from the banksters. It was done debt-free. The other SNC-Lavalin has been involved with is the BRI, or the Belt and Road Initiative, that China and Russia and et cetera are rolling out across Eurasia. They are the number one company for engineering the BRI. They're helping build the rail infrastructure, the port infrastructure, et cetera, architectural people. So they had to have a black eye. So the Canadian government came out with this made-up story that SNC-Lavalin is bad and they take all these bribes and they're doing all this. Yet these are the same people calling SNC-Lavalin bad that take bribes and do exactly what other corporations want them to do, because, oh, that corporation, you know, gave me a brand new house or, you know, a brand new car, whatever. But these are the politicians. These are the bureaucrats that work behind the scenes that are calling SNC-Lavalin bad. And the only reason they're doing it is because SNC-Lavalin is moving into the multipolar world and going to be very successful. That's what we're looking at. The collapse of the unipolar world against the multipolar world. But SNC-Lavalin is not the company that everybody thinks is so bad. They bought the technology for these reactors because nobody here in Canada would invest in the company that created it and held all the patents. That company went bankrupt. And so they bought it out of bankruptcy.
I think I'm just
they were in the right place at the right time.
You could have bought it out of bankruptcy, Duke. It was in bankruptcy. Anybody could have. They just happened to say, wait a minute, that's really good technology that we should roll out on the global stage. The Malthusians here in Canada went, no, because then you're going to save people's lives and we're going to get the population increasing instead of decreasing. Our eugenics program will not work.
So I want to be the guy who grabs the steering wheel, and this time I'm going to yank to the right earlier tonight, we were talking about the U.S. economy and how it's no longer the international benchmark that everyone is using. And I know a lot of the audience is out there going, yeah, but the U.S. economy is doing so well. I'm going to put a question out to both of you, and I know Doug is going to have an answer for this. The U.S. economy, just like our Canadian economy, is driven by consumerism. If we stop buying stuff at Walmart, Walmart and the companies that supply them with stuff are going to go broke. So the economy is driven on consumerism. That's applicable to the U.S. as well. So where is this current consumerism coming from that's driving the U.S. economy? Is it international trade or domestic consumerism? Barry, your thoughts, buddy.
Doug, you go first.
It's neither. Those numbers are made up. Those are fictitious numbers. Why do you think that they're having to pump $120 billion into the overnight every Monday to Friday? All of the other numbers, the GDP, oh, the GDP rose 1.2%. Oh, look at the stock market. Everything's going great. It's all fiction. People aren't buying big TVs and car. As a matter of fact, the subprime car market just collapsed about a month ago. They're in deep trouble down there. They've got cars sitting on vacant lots all across the United States. Did you see last year Buick was building cars in China, and the dock that they had, I don't know, what was it, 20,000 cars on, caught on fire? It's what they call that Jewish lightning thing, because they couldn't sell them, so they lit them up.
Moisha, I hear you had a fire. Shh, not till Tuesday.
Okay, I missed that. My cat had to go outside. What happened in China?
About a year ago, Buick, okay, they build cars over there. Buick builds cars over there. They had them on this dock in I guess it was in Shanghai. They had like 20,000 units sitting on the dock, and they caught fire. But these 20,000 units have been sitting on the dock for 2 years.
Huh.
Yeah, they were, instead of being the model year of 2017, they were a 2015 model year. They couldn't sell them. But suddenly, out of nowhere, they all caught fire. And the insurance company paid for it.
Nothing to see there, Doug.
Jeez, nothing to see here. Move along, please. Move along.
Just a coincidence, man. Just a coincidence.
All a quinky day.
We know nothing.
So you look at the numbers. There's a guy called John Williams. John Williams runs a website called shadowstats.com. So for your listening audience, it's shadowstats.com, John Williams. And he actually gives you the real numbers that are going on GDP, on inflation, et cetera, et cetera. Go onto his website. Boy, that'll enlighten you. Holy moly. They don't like him.
I'd like to go see that. You'll have to post that for me, Doug.
Okay, let's see if I can. I'll go get it.
Yeah, or even post it here in chat. I'd like to have a look at that.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah. Because, of course, you're hearing all this talk about the American economy being great, 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 great. And, of course, you got to stand back and take it with a grain of salt. Because their economy,
you got to ask yourself, what's making it great? What's driving the car? What's driving this engine, right? Well, the whole economy is based on consumerism, whether it's oil and gasoline or Barbie dolls at Christmas. The whole economy is based on consumerism. So where is this consumerism? Is it just Americans buying all kinds of gasoline and Barbie dolls and McDonald's drive-through? Is that what's driving the consumerism? Because eventually, a self-feeding economy is going to start cannibalizing itself. It can't sustain itself. It needs external input, not external control, not a flood of external input, but it does need external input. It can't sustain itself if it's all domestic-driven consumerism.
So what do you think? This is just a big bubble? The bubble's going to burst?
Well, as Doug says, it's all fake.
Smoke and mirrors?
I put it into the chat.
Figures don't lie, but liars sure can figure.
Mm.
I put into the chat for you, Barry, Shadow Government yeah. Stats. That's John Williams' site.
Yeah, after the show's over, I'm going to have a look at that.
You'll be on there for next couple of days.
Really?
It's really interesting. If you haven't been on it before, you could really kind of get into it. I mean, he's really good at what he does.
Huh. I'm going to have to definitely have a look at it.
Yeah. I've been following him for years.
So what do you think is going to happen here in the next couple months in this country, guys? Anything significant? What do you think is going to happen in the States here in the next week or two, Doug, with the reports that are going to come out? What are your thoughts on that?
With all the stuff that's going on with this impeachment, I think the Democrats are doing the worst thing they can possibly do for themselves in the next election. But then again, they don't really have anybody to run against Trump that's significant. So they've got to do whatever they can to muddy that waters. I mean, you look at the Democratic candidates like Hiawatha, Elizabeth Warren, right? I'm 1,024th Indian. Yeah, okay, Hiawatha. You know, you look at Joe Biden. Ooh, they call him Creepy Joe now.
Nancy Pelosi.
Well, Pelosi's not running.
I like Joe Biden's hairy legs.
Psycho girl from hell, man. When that woman talks, I look at her eyes, eh? And
oh, yeah, they get squirrely eyes.
Well, yeah, but you look into her brain, man, and you know there's something really, really weird going on inside that brain. Her eyes are a portal into her head. Go ahead.
What about AOC? Oh, my God.
Yes, she's another star candidate for the Democratic
Party. She is the best thing that's happened to the Republican Party since who knew when?
Pancakes.
It's amazing. She's done more for the Republicans than any Democrat or any Republican alive, for that matter.
Well, what? You don't think the new Green Deal is a great idea, man? Come on, guys. We've got to save the planet.
Well, we'll be talking about that later. We'll be talking about that one later tonight, by the way, Barry.
Let's get in. No, we do want to get into a conversation about climate change because that would take about 3 hours to really get into.
Well, on the roundtable tonight, I'm going to discuss the money behind climate change. And I've got a document that we're going to put up there. I'll show you who's funding it and why. But that's not for this conversation. But coming back to what we're looking at here with this impeachment crapola, and it's nothing more than that. It's just a distraction to stop people from looking at the Democratic candidates running for president in the next election. Basically, they're scared, Barry. Those people are scared. The Democrats are scared down there. Who are they going to run against? Trump? Horizontal Harris had to bow out. Well, actually, she kind of... She left. That Beto, whatever his name was, the Irishman from Mexico, who kept calling. He was born in Dublin, Mexico.
Well, they got Elizabeth Warren. They got Joe Biden.
Hiawatha?
Nancy Pelosi. Come on, they got Stark.
I have a question. I have a question for both of you gentlemen. What makes you think the Democrats want to get to the election? They know they're going to lose. They don't want the election to happen.
That's true, too. That's very true.
The last thing they want to do is run the risk of 64 million deplorables voting for Trump and turning themselves into 300 million deplorables. That's the last thing the Democrats want. And they'll do anything they can. Anything they can to stop that from happening, whether that's another Las Vegas shooting, whether that's Dearborn, Michigan declaring Sharia law in the entire county, whether that's Minneapolis, Minnesota police officers killing more unarmed white mothers while they report a crime.
How about a small suitcase nuke in a small American city?
Oh, a snook.
Nuke.
No, a snook. They call them snooks because they're call suitcase them snooks. Snooks.
Suitcase nuke. A blast perimeter of about, what was that I was reading about them? They're out there. Imagine the effect that would have on the American public.
If and
of course, CNN would come on the air the next 20 minutes and go, folks, there's 9 more of these snooks running around the United States of America. We don't know where they are. Boy, oh, boy.
Well, don't, stuff, you don't even have to worry about
nothing's out of their playbook, man.
You don't have to worry about nukes. There was 42 kilograms of an international nerve agent called carfentanil, 5,000 times more lethal than fentanyl, in a home in Pickering, Ontario, with the brother of the Danforth shooter. 42 kilograms of carfentanil is enough internationally recognized lethal nerve agent to kill every single Canadian 52 times over. All it would take is to send that out to the right guys in the right places with a cheap little Piper Cub and a plastic baggie. Shake it out over the, Calgary Stampede and watch thousands of people die. Shake it out over Canada Day celebrations anywhere in the country and watch people die. Dump it in the New York subway, into the ventilation system in New York subway, and watch people die. Don't worry about nukes. They got all kinds of ways to kill us. Nukes are just one really messy way.
Yeah, nukes would actually destroy what they want to have when we're all gone, and that's a planet of utopia. So nukes to kind of make a mess of that. So that might not be in their playbook. And carfentanil, Duke, what was it there for? That's a question that we'll probably never be able to answer. But that was a shocking report that much of that chemical is sitting in a house in Toronto. Well, that's the one they found. Is there more of those in Toronto right now? You'd have to think that possibly there would be. And what's the end game for something like that? Well, it sure would create chaos doing exactly what you just said. So nothing is out of their playbook. Nothing is out of the realm of possibility. They will do anything they can to retain power.
Yep.
Period. Doesn't matter if it's 3,000, 30,000, 3 million, 30 million people. It wouldn't make a difference to them in any shape or form. They have no heart. They have no soul.
Their intentions, Barry and Doug, we all talk about it, but the people need to hear this plain and simple right to your face. Your enemy's intentions are written in stone. They are there for you to see. They're called the Georgia Guidestones. Mm-hmm. Can't be much plain and simpler than being written in stone.
Why not just take a walk through the Atlanta airport and read the messages that are on the walls? It's all there, black and white.
Or the Denver airport as well.
Denver airport. Exactly. Why don't we talk about the tunnel systems that exist under the United States of America, crisscrossing the country in multiple directions, and the underground cities that have been set aside for that particular time when they want to go underground? I believe that's there right now. You wonder where all this money that goes missing in the U.S. government, they announce that they're missing a couple trillion here, a couple trillion there, just a couple trillion, who cares? Where's that money going and what's it being used for?
Things like $64 million toilet seats on the Apollo lunar lander, the one that never left orbit.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, remember when Jade Helm was happening there about 4 years ago, everybody was paying attention to the military convoys moving across the United States of America, and it was documented. You had train loads of military tanks and all kinds of military equipment moving across the country. Where did all that go?
I was just going to ask you that. Let me think.
If you really wanted to go down a deep, if you want to go down a really deep rabbit hole, and you were thinking about a time when you wanted to unleash heck on the human race in the United States of America, you'd want to have a bunch of equipment hidden underground, ready to roll out at that particular moment. Where do you think it all went, Duke? I know where it went. It went underground. Because it's not being documented on surface facilities, storage facilities. Where did it all go? There's a couple of vids on that you should watch on YouTube. Guys are trying to track that equipment when it came off the trains and where it ended up going. It'll surprise you. They don't know. It disappeared.
Okay. So here I was up in northern Nevada. I was up out of Winnemucca. I was consulting on a gold mine up in northern Nevada. The head office was in Winnemucca. And all these huge tractor-trailer trucks with their flatbeds were running the highway. We would leave Winnemucca in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. We'd head down the highway to go down to the turnoff where we'd go up to the mine site. And that was about a 25-mile drive. And all these trucks out at 5 o'clock in the morning, these low boys, and they're carrying tanks, APCs, all this heavy equipment is being transported on I-80, I guess the name of the highway, in northern Nevada. And they were going out west. And I'm going, where the hell are they taking these things? And every morning for about 10 days, just these convoys of American military equipment being moved down the highway, the interstate. And I was like, wow, is that a – wonder what's going on. I went into Reno about – I guess it would be about 3 or 4 weeks after this. And coming into Reno, they had this big, huge, flat – what I now would call a staging area. And it had a rail line come into it. The rail, and that's where they actually were taking all this equipment. It was being put onto the rails. What I saw there was probably half of the equipment was still there. The other half had been shipped out on rail. And I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting considering, you know, what are they doing with it? Where is it going?
And what's it being set aside for?
Well, exactly. And it's we're not talking old equipment. We're not talking, stuff
from World War II. State of the art.
Yeah, it was all brand new.
Yeah.
All shiny and brand new. Not shiny because it's bale. It's in and that olive dab in that desert dab. So they're not shiny, but they're all brand new.
Boy, we sound like a bunch of conspiracy nuts, don't we?
Yeah, and it's fun. But when you here's the thing, Barry, when you actually see it, it's a whole other thing from hearing. Oh yeah, sure, yeah, okay. You know, people will tell you, oh yeah, blah blah blah, and then you go, wow, I actually saw this stuff. Wow,
And so lots.
And I have no idea where it was going, where its final destination was.
Well, after the show's over here, I there's a couple people that I've been watching that were kind of following that a couple of years ago, and it seems like the equipment just kind of it disappeared. They don't see it in large storage facilities or military bases. With drones now, they can fly over these places and really kind of get a good idea of what's going on. And it seems like it's just disappeared. A lot of it's just disappeared. So my thought is that they probably stuck it underground. We know that they've been tunneling under the United States of America for years. That's a fact. It's proven.
Yeah, don't surprise me.
So where would you put it if you wanted it out of sight?
Yeah, exactly. I have no idea.
Well, that's another conspiracy theory for another day, but nothing is out of the realm of possibility when we start talking about this kind of stuff. It really, their playbook is all-encompassing. Like I said, there's nothing they won't do to achieve the end game.
That's for absolute sure. Because, I mean, Duke, do you have that tape you play every once in a while on the air of Trudeau talking about what politicians want?
Old Trudeau. Yeah.
Oh.
Pierre.
Let me see if I can find that.
Yeah, that would be a fun one to play. 15 seconds of truth.
Yeah. Politicians want power. It's a power game.
Let me find it. Oh,
hey, Barry.
Oh, we put him on a quest now. Oh, gosh.
Hey, Barry.
Yes, Steve.
That may not come through Duke's system.
Huh? I think I can crank it up loud enough that my microphone will pick it up, Steve. I've got a pretty decent desktop stereo here, and it's just a short little clip.
Okay, play it there, Duke.
Is it a YouTube clip?
I'm just digging it up on my other computer.
Is it a YouTube clip?
Hey. No, it's a clip that I've taken myself here. And
Duke, I'll try it. I have it here on my desktop. Let's see.
I have it right here, Doug. I'm about to click play. Okay.
Go ahead. Do it.
It's just taking a second. God, old computer.
We need special powers, the politicians. They're the ones who want special powers naturally because they're in the power game. And what they can get from Ottawa, they will have more in Charlottetown, in Quebec City, in Victoria, BC. That's the game of politics, power.
Did you hear that?
There you go.
And that was Pierre Elliott Trudeau.
Did it came through loud enough that you guys could hear it, Steve? It was good?
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right. Then I won't play it again.
They call it 15 seconds of truth.
Yeah, I love that clip. I use that in the intro to my Saturday Night Politically Speaking show. That and the clip of his son Justin pledging allegiance to the Queen and her heirs.
You mean Castro's son Justin? Straight, buddy. Anybody that hasn't looked at a side-by-side comparison of Justin Trudeau and Fidel Castro, you are missing a very entertaining experience, to say the least. Well, hey, Duke, I was skeptical when I first saw the link, but I studied it, and I studied it, and I studied it. And his face and Castro's face are so close, it's almost undeniable, okay? And we know Margaret was... had a little bit of a loose reputation.
Little.
Of course, she was just another stage. Well, she was just another stage marriage to make it look like that Pierre was just a normal Canadian. But then if you look into Pierre's background, you'll find out that he was an attendee at a place called the Bohemian Grove.
You know,
imagine
Barry,
that.
Barry, we got to be, we're politically correct now. Okay, this is 2019, and we have to be politically correct. It's not nice to call Margaret Trudeau a slutty tramp. She was a woman of peculiar tastes, let's put it that way. They never ever – did you ever notice that she never ever spent time in the southern part of the United States? I think that has something to do with the common reference down there to, it's time for a hoedown. And Maggie just took that the wrong way.
Anyways, we all know the history of Margaret, and we all know that they were down in Cuba, and her and Castro were kind of rubbing shoulders, and now we have a prime minister that looks so much like Fidel Castro. It's almost hilarious, man. People got to go look at that if you've never looked at it. There is absolutely no resemblance between Pierre Elliott Trudeau's face and Justin Trudeau. No facial feature comparisons of any kind. So say facial recognition experts that have looked at it. So it's kind of interesting. There you go. Another fraud. Another politician to pretend to be what he isn't. Can you imagine, guys?
Oh, you opened another conspiracy theory.
Obama? And my birth certificate? The 7-year birth certificate that was debunked by every Photoshop in the United States of America. Yeah, that guy. Magic. Lots of magic in our society. Like, how did Trudeau get elected again in Canada? You know, if the Bloc hadn't got their votes in Quebec, we'd have another majority Liberal government. How would that happen? When everybody I ever talked to about Trudeau just hated his guts. And here we have him back again. Well, it's not an election, it's a selection. Our voting machines were rigged. I'm absolutely convinced.
No.
Can you imagine something like that happening in today's world? Dude, I just can't. I mean, no. George Soros owns the machine, so you know that nothing could ever go wrong.
Barry, Pat King did a video, okay, on election day where he went into the voting booth in Alberta where he was, and he came out and he said, look what they give us to vote with, pencils. You got to mark your ballot with a pencil. It brings back Stalin's thing. It doesn't matter who votes. It only matters who counts the votes with an eraser.
Exactly. It's pretty easy to get rid of.
Voting machines, they just need an eraser.
pretty easy to get rid of a pencil mark.
I was amazed.
I'll have you guys know that here in Ontario, the election process is not flawed. When I ran as a candidate in the provincial election, I got 8 votes. That's 8 more than I expected, because I didn't even vote for myself.
And that was the end of your political career, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I never say never. I run for political office. I know a man who studied and became an ordained minister, not because he wanted to spread the word of the gospel, because he wanted access to information that only ordained ministers had access to. Would I run as a candidate and get elected as a politician again? Yes. Why? Because elected politicians have access to information that me, the common man, doesn't have. Would I ever set foot in the House of Legislature? No. But I'd spend a whole lot of time in the archives and the libraries.
Yeah, it's dusty in there, boy. I tell you.
Yeah. I sat on a Ontario government committee back in the early 90s under the Bob Rae government. And people in Toronto would be amazed at the network of underground tunnels and storage vaults, literally locked rooms underground all through the University Avenue area in around Queen's Park. You can walk halfway to Yonge Street underground and never leave the secured area of Queen's Park and the government.
Wow.
Because it's all secured hallways with rooms off the hallways where they store hundreds of years worth of documents. They're all sitting there.
Wow.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It blew my mind because they took us down there. We went down and looked. We were looking up for old statistics on traffic accidents and that sort of thing. And two of the neat things that I remember that we found that sort of stuck with me all these years. In 1917, the state of Ohio only had 2 licensed vehicles in the entire state, and they had an accident. They collided into each other. For any of you who live in the Niagara area and deal with tourists from Ohio, you'll be sitting there going, yeah, I could see that happening. The other really interesting thing that we found was that the province of Ontario had asked but not been confirmed that it took place. The province of Ontario had asked the city of London, Ontario, to remove a city bylaw as it was considered redundant. The bylaw stated that in London, Ontario, it is against the law for ladies to wear loud hats on Sunday. And the Ontario legislature actually asked the city of London to remove that bylaw in 71 or 72. The provincial government asked the city of London to remove the bylaw concerning loud hats and Sundays.
Of all things,
that's
never
the kind of thing our government deals with, folks. Here we are,
they do
about our sovereignty, and these people are more concerned about loud hats on Sundays, and you wonder what's wrong with our system.
They got nothing better to do with their time, buddy. They got to earn their $150,000 a year somehow.
Oh, here, you want to hear a funny story?
Yeah.
You want to hear how we got income tax here in Canada?
Second World War. Is that not correct?
This nope. is a good one.
Nope. I'll tell you the funny story.
Okay.
Because it's a good. You won't be laughing after you hear it. Let me just put it to you that way. It's a funny story, not ha ha. Okay. Somebody's calling.
Cynically and sarcastically funny.
Yeah. So in 1946, the King of England, King George VI. Decided that Canada needed a governor general. So he appointed his friend, Alexander of Tunisus, to be the governor general of Canada. Now, of course, the King of England didn't have any claim on Canada to appoint a governor general, but he did it anyways. And he didn't do it with his constitutional monarchy, he just did it by himself, which he had no right to do either. But in 1947, the governor general that he appointed in 1946 had no power. So he said to the Canadian Parliament, which ceased to exist in 1931 and had no legal standing, he said to the Canadian Parliament, I need you to set up a committee that can create letters patent for my new Governor General for Canada. And the Canadian government, Parliament said, yeah, okay, we'll do that. And they did. So they created these letters patent for the new Governor General in 1947. And within the letters patent, they included the British North American Act, simply because there's a clause in the British North American Act, I think it's Section 12, that says the Governor General can work alone. In other words, create an order in council. Mm. So they get all that. And then the King says, well, I can't sign it. So Prime Minister of Canada, you sign it on my behalf. Okay, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Know what I mean? So he did. And Alexander of Tunisus then went to work. And he created in 1948 the Income Tax Act. 1948, which was an order in council created by him and him alone. He gave it royal assent, and And that's why we have income tax today. And by the way, from 1946 to 1952, when Alexander of Tennessee was our governor general, that was the only thing he ever did. Oh. Funny story. And there you
go. Our tax laws never got voted on by the people that we elected into the office to vote and represent us. It never happened. Same with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It never went to Parliament. Doug, I have a little question for you, sir.
Go for it.
What is the name of the Prime Minister that fraudulently signed these documents along with the criminal king?
William Lyon Mackenzie King.
Yeah. Sorry, what's his name?
William Lyon Mackenzie King.
No, I think you've got that wrong. I think you mean William Lying there Mackenzie you King.
You're making
the
this up.
The biggest traitor to the Canadian people who ever drew a breath.
Exactly. Well, other than John A. Macdonald, who became a Sir John A. Macdonald because he decided that that he wasn't going to raise a ruckus over not allowing Canada to confederate. So they paid him off. They married him off to some lady that gave him the title Sir, and he cut 2,000 pounds a year for life. He sold the Quebec resolutions under the Kingdom of Canada Act down the proverbial path. That's why we got letters patent and a governor general and a dictator and not the Confederation documents that they profess the letters patent are.
Well,
I
gotta
go too far.
I've got to go back to school. We're getting down to the last 8 minutes of the show here. How is the Myth of Canada going for you, Doug, right now? How much activity are you seeing on the website?
Oh, my God, I'm going nuts. We released the DVD tutorials, both on USB stick and on DVDs, and I'm just going nuts. People are ordering them. But basically what I just told you the last couple of minutes here about the story about the Alexander of Tennessee and about the British North American Act, John A. Macdonald, that's all on the tutorial DVDs. And I did a deal. They're $20. That's it. Send me $20 and $3 for shipping and handling, and I'll send you a DVD or a USB, whichever you choose. And you can have the entire thing. There's 6 tutorial videos. They run from 12 minutes to about 8 minutes. Depending upon which ones you're looking at. And I cover the British North American Act, the Hudson's Bay Charter, the Imperial Conferences, the Statute of Westminster, the Queen of Canada enactment in 1952, and we go into detail on the Canada Act, which turned into the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the British North American Act, where they scratched out the name British North American Act and wrote Constitution Act 1982.
Sounds like something be worth looking at, and I've probably a very good idea to get it, folks, and if anything, educate ourselves, because it's something I haven't really been able to grasp the whole picture yet myself, but I'm working on it. But yeah, send me one, Doug. I'll send you $20.
And Barry, if you send me via email your mailing address, I'll put one in the mail for you Monday morning.
Okay, I will. We'll talk after the show's over here, and I'll give you a credit card, Doug. Consider.
Well, I don't do credit cards. I'm sorry.
You don't.
But your money is no good with us.
Well, I have a prepaid credit card here.
That's okay. Your money's no good with us. I'll just send it to you because you need to know.
Okay. I won't say no to that. Anyways, Duke, we're down to the last 6 minutes of the show here. Do you want to talk about what you're doing with your shows and what's coming up tonight with you guys in the roundtable? And, Doug, you can talk about that and talk a little bit more about your Myth of Canada, and we'll have to shut out the show.
Well, Barry, I've been sitting here as Doug was talking about what's going on with our political government and constitutional situation here in Canada. I know that you have a lot of American listeners out there, and I think some of those American listeners are kind of going, what do you mean there's no constitution, and what do you mean the government in Canada isn't legal? If you take a good look at your own government right now and think back to what Doug was saying about your ability to stop using the Federal Reserve notes and start using Treasury notes, you have remedy in the United States because you guys have the basis of a lawful government. You have a constitution that gives you the power to clean up your government, to drain the swamp, to use a Donald Trump term. Here in Canada, we don't have that foundation. We're in the process of building the very thing that you guys created in 1776. Hmm. What's happened to what was created in 1776 since then, what you've got now, that's a Frankenstein sort of abominable snowman that has been created out of what was originally there. Here in Canada, we're looking to create that original Constitution and Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights. Here in Canada, we don't have any of that. And that's what we're working on building. That's what the Myth Is Canada is all about. First, our job is to convince our fellow Canadians that the Dominion created in 1867 was not a country, it was a dominion. It was what the United States was in 1774 before the Revolutionary War. Hmm. Canada never became a country. It ceased being a dominion in 1931 under the Statute of Westminster, which, by the way, celebrates its 88th birthday on Wednesday. It's an 88-year-old virgin. It's never been used. The Statute of Westminster is the British document that frees every single man and woman on the landmass colloquially called Canada. Okay, the 1931 Statute of Westminster freed all of the 10 dominions to become independent countries. And that's what we at the Myth Is Canada are working on doing, educating Canadians in order to build that which the United States built in 1776. Not what they have now, what they built in 1776.
Time's up, Duke.
How'd I do?
Okay, Doug, listen, last minute here. Where can people
find you? I've got somebody on after you, Barry.
We're down to the last couple minutes here. But
Barry.
www.themythiscanada.com or .ca. That's, and you can contact us through the website. There's a drop down, info@themythiscanada is the email. But cool. And everybody, if you want to donate, there's a donate button that drops down to the swag. That's where you can order the DVDs. We have hats and t-shirts as well.
Cool. That sounds like something that would be worth spending $20 on, guys. Hey, listen, you know, this has been a great show today, guys. I've enjoyed the conversations. We've gone a million different directions, but we always kind of end up back at the same place. And that's because all roads seem to lead to Rome. So great show today, guys. I want to thank you for taking your time to join me. I'll be on your round table tonight, and it's been a pleasure. I'll be back next week, guys. Same time, same place. I have Alex Newman coming in next week from The New American. I'm looking forward to that show. And I believe Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson is going to join me next week. So I'll be seeing you guys next week. Have a great week. Thanks to Stephen, of course, for producing my shows. I almost forgot. And I'll be back next week. Have a great week. Bye for now.